All right, we're back here, and we're back here with another facet of Holland Hospital. And if you have questions along the way, feel free to call here, 395-1450. Our guest this morning is Michelle MacArthur. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Duke.
And she has all kinds of letters behind her name, BSN and RN. You want to tell us what's the BSN, man? I know what an RN is.
I think most people know what BS is. We won't go there. The BSN is a Bachelor of Science in Nursing. It means that I have a four-year degree.
Okay.
Graduated from Grand Valley State University with my bachelor's degree in nursing.
Okay, very good.
And the RN is a registered nurse, which is a qualification. After you study for 4 years, you have to sit and take an exam that's administered at a state and national level, and all nurses have to demonstrate proficiency, and then we earn that RN after.
Most do.
Mm-hmm. We hope so.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about type 2 diabetes today, and that should be of interest to a lot of people. And if you have a question about it along the way, you may call us 395-1450. All right, the difference between diabetes and pre-diabetes.
Right. Most people have heard of diabetes, and probably a lot of people have heard of pre-diabetes as well. What people get confused on is how the two are related to each other. Pre-diabetes is basically a stage in the development of diabetes. Most of us don't all of a sudden get diagnosed with diabetes overnight. We pass through a number of years in which maybe our blood sugars are not managed, or our body is not managing our blood sugar as well as it should. And we know that when we start to see those blood sugars rise, we are on a path that leads to diabetes. We now, because we know how the disease develops, we actually have that diagnosis of prediabetes so that we can look and see, all right, we are in the danger range. We're on a path that leads to diabetes, and we know how to avoid that endpoint. Once we have that diagnosis of prediabetes, we know it's time to get serious about diabetes prevention so that we don't wind up actually having type 2 diabetes.
Right, right. So that's the important part is when you get to that point, let's do something about it.
Exactly. And again, the message is twofold. First of all, we want to know whether we're prediabetic. It's extremely common, but a lot of people are prediabetic and are not aware of it. So until we're aware, we don't know that we need to make any changes.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part of the message is to make sure that we know what it is. We know that we are on that path. We get the diagnosis, and then we can deal with the diagnosis.
Now, some people have problems with the type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, type 1 diabetes used to be called juvenile diabetes. It's really not preventable, and we have a pretty good idea of some of the mechanisms that cause type 1 diabetes,
mm-hmm.
but it's basically not preventable. It usually appears in younger people. Type 2 diabetes used to be called adult onset diabetes. We know what causes that. That's the one where we're pre-diabetic first, then we become diabetic. We don't call it adult onset diabetes anymore because now with the obesity epidemic that we have, we even have children who are becoming type 2 diabetes.
Really?
Yes.
That's scary,
isn't
it? More
all the time. More all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah. And how prevalent is it?
It's a huge problem. The latest statistics that I have show that about 35% of people over the age of 20 are pre-diabetic already. The raw figure, 79 million Americans. So the number is higher as our age increases, our risk increases with age. But if we're looking just statistically speaking, 35%, which is more than a third of Americans, are already on that path to developing diabetes.
Hmm. So kind of keep your eye on it a little bit if you're prone to be that way. Now, could you check with your doctor, your physician, to see if you are in that situation?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's one of the most important things that we can do. A lot of us, I don't want to include myself in that group, but let's just say there was a time where I wasn't really current with my doctor.
Mm-hmm.
We get to an age, you know, where we think of ourselves as invincible and we don't go to the doctor. But that's where things can sneak up on us, and that's the critical message. We do need to see our doctors. We do need to have those blood tests to show where our blood sugar is. Doctors can also talk to us about risk factors and help us determine whether we're at risk, who should be actually screened for prediabetes.
Right. Is age a risk factor?
Absolutely. The way it was put to me one time by a physician was that if we live long enough, all of us will eventually develop type 2 diabetes.
Hmm.
Some of us might die of something else. Say we were predestined to get diabetes at 98 years of age, according to our basic makeup. Something else killed us first.
Mm-hmm.
But sooner or later, theoretically, we will all develop diabetes. Our pancreas, which is the organ in our body that produces insulin, sooner or later it gives out and we can't produce enough insulin, and that's what happens.
Now, I have a call here.
Diabetes.
Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Hello. I am, right now, I am pre-diabetic. I wake up with a like a blood sugar of 130, and I don't really want to take metformin because it will knock me to low blood sugar. What do you do in that kind of circumstance?
Okay. First of all, you are seeing a doctor, and he's aware
yes,
of
it? Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am. But that one, that just is kind of a tough area that it's not being addressed real well with a lot of people, I think. I don't think I'm alone in that.
Okay. There are a lot of things that you can do to address your blood sugar, principally learning about diet and exercise and how that affects your blood sugar. It's also going to slow the progression. If you do have prediabetes, it's going to slow the progression so that maybe you never get diabetes. I will say that metformin is an excellent medication, and it is not generally known to cause low blood sugar. That's one of the positives of that medication. There are other diabetes medications that can cause a low blood sugar, but metformin is not known for that. It's generally considered a safe medication, so I guess I would recommend that you talk to your doctor again specifically about metformin and what the benefits are for being on metformin versus not. That said, I can tell you that the current research shows that lifestyle interventions, specifically choosing our foods correctly, looking at moderate weight loss, and getting physical activity 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, have been scientifically proven to be more effective than taking the medication as far as controlling your risk for developing type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, I've been doing that, and that's why it's coming down, so I'm not taking near as much metformin. And so I think that's why I'm in that lower range now, and that's what I don't want to, you know, be at risk waking up with 130, because that's not in the normal range, correct?
130 is high, yes. The normal range for fasting blood sugar or your blood sugar first thing in the morning is generally 70 to 100.
Okay.
In that pre-diabetes range, people can get up over that. We start to see those numbers come up. We want to look at what we can do to bring them down.
Got it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
You're welcome.
Okay, got a question? Call us 395-1450. Line's open here. You can talk to Michelle, and she has some answers for you if you have a question, possibly. All right, let's continue here with what problems diabetes causes, and in the short term and long term.
Okay. Well, I think most people are familiar with the consequences of uncontrolled diabetes. When we don't manage that blood sugar, we basically get what doctors refer to as microvascular complications. Those are problems with the blood supply, the little tiny capillaries that supply blood in places like the eye, which has very dense capillary beds. So we see blindness. It's one of the first places that damage from diabetes
mm-hmm.
shows up. The other place that's really common that we see is kidney damage. And it's the same reason. We have very fine capillaries, very fine blood vessels that are at risk when we have elevated blood sugar. So we can see kidney damage, and we can even see people after years of uncontrolled diabetes wind up needing dialysis or kidney replacement, but kidney transplant. We really, the message is about prevention first, control second, and we really can avoid those complications. We know how to treat diabetes. We know how to prevent diabetes. And in this day and age, there's really no reason for anyone to have to suffer those complications.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the financial impact on your life can be pretty devastating.
Yeah, both at a personal level and economically for the country. I wish I had the figures in front of me, and unfortunately I don't, what diabetes costs this country. But the fact that it is an epidemic, and the fact that this pre-diabetes, with, again, 35% of younger people being at risk for the disease, we know that if those people turn into people with diabetes as
right.
well, the impact on the healthcare system, which is already strained, is enormous. So that's, again, why we're focusing first from a personal level. Nobody wants to have diabetes. For me, the financial impact of it would be minor in comparison to the physical impact, mm-hmm. to the lifestyle impact. But definitely, it's costly to have diabetes, to have to poke your finger every day, to have to pay
for
the medications. And it's costly to the healthcare system.
Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Good morning. I would like to give a warning out for people that are on the diet like the Atkins diet. I myself, and I can think of four other people that were on the diet. When you're on the diet, it's mostly fat and protein and meat, and you become you're in a state of ketosis, which mm-hmm. is one of the I found that when I was on it, and then when I went off it, I came out with, I think I was only 30, 33, something like that, came down with full-blown diabetes, and at the University of Michigan,
the weather is presented by HollandKia.com.
And they couldn't decide whether I was, because I was that young, whether I was type 1 or type 2, ended up on insulin. But I would warn people about these any type of diet that puts you in ketosis.
Okay. Yeah, diet is a tricky subject. It's almost like talking to people about principles of raising their children. Everybody has opinions on it. I can tell you there's a lot of room for interpretation in an Atkins diet, or at least there is a lot of interpretation within the community for that diet. Basically, there are only three macronutrients. Everything that we eat falls into one of three categories: fat, protein, or carbohydrate. So if you eliminate carbohydrate from your diet, you're right. The only thing that's left is fat and protein, which obviously we can't survive on fat and protein alone. Theoretically speaking, if we limit our carbohydrates, we're going to limit the amount of glucose that's in our bloodstream, because the carbohydrate turns into glucose. That can help us manage our blood sugar in the short term. But if we're substituting fats, fats have been known, especially saturated fats or animal-based fats, fats that come from meat, dairy, those fats can actually contribute to the problem. They can make our insulin resistance worse, and type 2 diabetes is primarily a problem of insulin resistance. So, yeah, it's there can be some benefit to controlling the amount of carbohydrate that we eat in our diet, which is the good part of that Atkins type of diet. But again, there has to be a happy medium.
Mm-hmm. I'm concerned about the emphasis on carbohydrates. I know we tried cut down on the meat and to go with almost like a vegetarian diet,
mm-hmm.
and you end up with a lot of carbohydrates. Of course, they're not simple carbohydrates, but I wonder if just in trying to control blood sugars, if it doesn't aggravate the situation. Carbohydrates.
Again, not all carbohydrates are created equal. We do have to look at the difference. If we can look at a piece of white bread and say that's carbohydrate, and we know that white bread or white rice or potato is going to cause a very large peak or spike in our blood sugar. But if we look at things like green leafy vegetables or carbohydrates that also contain a lot of fiber, those are slower digested. They have less of an impact. I don't know if you're familiar with the concepts of glycemic index and glycemic load.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, we're teaching now more toward glycemic load, which not only tells us how quickly those carbohydrates are turned into sugar in the bloodstream, but it also tells us what is the net effect of those carbohydrates. How much damage does it do to the blood sugar in that particular minute moment? How much is it going to elevate your blood sugar?
Yes.
And if you haven't researched that, that might be something that you'd be interested in doing, looking at glycemic load.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've heard of the glycemic index, but the load, you know, I haven't heard of that. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. How is someone diagnosed with diabetes?
Basically comes down to a blood test. Mm-hmm. We are looking at the level of sugar or blood glucose in the bloodstream. And we have tests that show whether we're pre-diabetic or diabetic. The doctor will order those. The two most common tests Would be a fasting blood sugar. So the doctor's going to ask you not to eat anything for 12 hours. Come in, and bad news is they're going to take some blood out of your vein.
Yeah.
But with the results of that test, they will know if you're diabetic. The other blood test that's also gaining a lot of popularity is called a hemoglobin A1C. The fasting blood sugar tells us how your blood sugar is in the exact moment that we drew it at the laboratory. So it's a one-time instant picture of your blood sugar. The A1C, on the other hand, it gives us an average blood sugar over the previous 3 months. So in either case, whether we're looking at a fasting blood sugar or we're looking at a hemoglobin A1C, we can determine, based on the result of those tests, whether we're diabetic mm-hmm. or pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm. So if that's why the doctor gives you a blood test, probably.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's why it's important to check those blood sugar
yeah.
at least every year beyond a certain age. We don't want things to sneak up on us.
Right.
Again, the message of prevention. If we don't know we're pre-diabetic, if we haven't had that test done in 5 years, we could be in trouble before we know it.
Is there anything physically that could be happening to you that will say, hey, you got a problem or you might have a problem?
Usually by the time people are actually experiencing physical symptoms, the most common ones would be excessive thirst. And when you're drinking a lot, you're also urinating a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of things, usually when we get to that point, we're already diabetic. Unfortunately, when we're pre-diabetic, there aren't any physical symptoms. So again, that's why it is important to have the blood work done and know whether you're on that path.
Can we prevent diabetes?
Absolutely, absolutely, without a doubt. I want to scream that from the rooftops. Diabetes can be prevented. Or let me take that back one step. We can prevent type 2 diabetes.
Okay.
Type 2 diabetes in this country, between 90 and 95% of the people in this country who have diabetes have type 2 diabetes.
Hmm.
So 90 to 95% of those cases theoretically could be prevented. This is the positive message. As frightening as it is to know that we have this epidemic of diabetes already, and we have the next wave being those people who are pre-diabetic, the good news is we know how to prevent diabetes.
Okay. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, good morning, Duke. I was wondering if the doctor could tell me I have diabetes, and I'm having such a problem with water retention in my feet. What would be a good remedy to try to get rid of that problem? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. I am flattered that everyone thinks I'm a doctor, but I am a nurse. And I would have to say that the water retention, probably the best thing to do on that is going to be to talk to your doctor on that without, you know, first of all, I'm not qualified to prescribe. And second of all, I'm not where I can even see the patient to assess what kind of fluid we're talking about. So I think he probably
yeah.
needs to talk to his doctor.
A lot of people have trouble with the water, but the neuropathy and that sort of thing as well, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Neuropathy is one of the complications of diabetes. And again, when we manage diabetes properly, we're going to lower our risk for neuropathy and for any of the other complications associated with the disease.
Mm-hmm. Now, does Holland Hospital offer a program of some type that will assist these people who might be in that situation?
Yeah, what we're trying to do right now, again, screaming that message about diabetes prevention, we are offering several things at the Center for Good Health of Holland Hospital. We have regularly scheduled we'll call them presentations. We have a 90-minute presentation on diabetes prevention that's based on the findings of the National Diabetes Prevention Program, evidence-based, which will give people the tools that they need to get started with diabetes prevention. We will give them all the scientific evidence. We will focus on teaching them what they should be eating, what kind of activities they should be doing to try and lower that risk of becoming diabetic once we are diagnosed with prediabetes. That is a one-time class. We also offer individual coaching. Anyone who wants to sign up, the individual class or the 90-minute class is only $5, so it's probably the best bargain in healthcare. Okay, you
yeah.
can change your life, change your destiny for $5. The other option is individual coaching, which is a little bit more expensive, but you're going to have a one-on-one coach. You're going to get all the information that you need. We can speak to a registered dietitian. You can speak to an athletic trainer. You can speak to a nurse. We can even customize packages depending on what the person would like. And again, cost is more than that $5 cost, but still an investment in your future and your health, and quite reasonable cost-wise.
Yeah.
The other thing that we're really excited about is last spring, the Center for Good Health got a grant from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and we are presenting the National Diabetes Prevention Program, which is a year-long program to help people learn and to give them the support that they need to make those lifestyle changes to make sure that they don't spill from that category of pre-diabetic to diabetes. We have another group that's going to be opening up in September. It's a small group and space is limited. But if people are interested in joining the National Diabetes Prevention Program, we can get them signed up for that. And just they need to just call the Center for Good Health. I don't know if we've mentioned yet the number for the Center for Good Health.
We better.
Yeah, I think we better. The number is 394-3344.
394-3344.
Yes.
Okay. Just dial that number and you'll be in touch with them.
Yeah, and there will be a Michelle that answers the phone. It's not me, but it just tell her what you need to do, and she will direct you to the right person.
Okay. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yes. Now, we have someone, a friend of ours, who is always very thirsty. Is not overweight or anything, but seems to be nauseated sometime. Would that be anything to do with pre-diabetes or anything? Or doesn't that have anything to do with it?
I don't think I can answer that question. Excessive thirst can be a symptom of diabetes, but it can be a symptom of other things, too.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, someone who's not feeling well, who's thirsty and who's nauseated probably should be seeing their doctor.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. And I think we have another call coming in. Good morning. Good morning, talk to town.
Yeah, good morning. I would like to know if she could tell us what are the best things maybe to eat and what are the best things to do to avoid type 2 diabetes. And I will hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, so diet is a little bit complicated, but I'll start with activity. What I can tell you is, again, I had mentioned before that we are presenting the National Diabetes Prevention Program at the Center for Good Health. The findings of that tell us that 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity 5 days a week or 150 minutes a week is probably one of the number one things that you can do to control, to reduce your risk of becoming diabetic if you have prediabetes. We know that exercise has two benefits. It helps us lose weight, okay? And if we have a very moderate weight loss, as little as 5 to 7 or 10%, that alone is going to reduce our risk, okay? Because obesity or even being overweight is one of the primary risk factors for diabetes. So exercising to lose weight, and also exercising helps us increase the sensitivity of our every cell in our body to insulin, so it brings down our sugar. So exercise is of primary importance. That moderate intensity physical activity, how do we define that? That's where you're working hard enough. If what we like to tell people is go for a walk. If you are able to maintain a conversation with the person next to you, that's good.
Okay,
we want you to be able to maintain the conversation, but we don't want you to be just lollygagging. If you are not working hard enough that you can still sing a song or whistle a song, you need to crank up the activity level a little bit. So we don't want you panting, but we want you to be able to converse.
And another call here. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Good morning. I would like to talk to her about, I was at Spectrum Hospital for 6 weeks, and I was on prednisone, and during that time I got diabetes, and I had to give myself insulin shots.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, as I gradually went off from the prednisone, my blood sugar is okay. Can you explain that?
That medication is known to cause, it's basically like adding stress to your system, and your body's natural response to prednisone is to increase the blood sugar output. We know that happens even when people are diabetic and have been long diagnosed with diabetes. If they have to go on a course of prednisone, we have to increase their insulin. It is a direct result of that medication. It sounds like for you the good news is that you only needed to be on insulin while you were on the prednisone. Obviously, the important thing, the critical thing, would be to be following up with your doctor.